Somebody else? Okay. I don't know if I'm visible or not. It's maybe a bad facial day too, so maybe we want to click those off. Maybe you are noticing something. So bell-shaped curve, I'm going to put this up. This is the predisposition to risk, and I just want you to look at this. And what I'm going to ask you to do here in just a moment, I'm going to ask you to place yourself on this curve. Somewhere on this, you belong. You probably will know this pretty quickly. Some of you might have to think about it a little bit. If you look at people on the far right there, they are genetically predisposed, it feels like, to be risk takers. So these people who are on this kind of predisposition to risk curve, if you go over to there, you see that their brains are just not very sensitive to adrenaline. Some of you are like this, some of you know people like this. And they don't really have other stress modulators that really matter much to them. They have a lot of substance called GABA, if you know anything about GABA, and you can go read up on that later. It's kind of interesting how there just seems to be some people who have a lot of the substance, and they seem to have low anxiety. They just kind of hum along, no problem. Some of you who have high anxiety, you're jealous of those people. You wish you were those people. But these people require actually a lot of risk to just keep from feeling bored. They get bored a lot. They have a hard time sitting still. These are people who like to do things. Things like, even if you go far down that bell curve, skydiving or bungee jumping. Scary things. Tightrope walking. Did you see the guy climb the building yesterday? How many of you guys see that? Yeah. Then what? Nobody saw this? Am I the only person? Okay, some of you saw this. Go watch it. As he got to the top of it, it was, an hour and a half. As he got to the top of it, I felt myself. I was like, oh, I don't think I'm on the low anxiety, high risk. I was feeling it as he got to the top. I was just like, oh, that would feel like a lot to have gone through. These scary things like tightrope walking and maybe alligator wrestling. Anyone? Alligator wrestling? For me, karaoke bars. Anybody? Karaoke bars? All right. Now, if you're in the middle of this curve, you kind of are set up for average amounts of anxiety. At some point there, you feel anxious about different risks, and, you know, there's just things that scare you a little bit, but you're okay for most of the time. And then if you're on the far left over there, you are kind of seem to be a little more predisposed to be a risk avoider. The idea of risk scares you. Me saying the word risk makes you uncomfortable. You don't like playing the board game Risk. None of this is good for you. Your brain is extremely sensitive to adrenaline. You don't like adrenaline. When you're around people with adrenaline, you can understand that for them, but you don't really understand it, and you think it's a little crazy even. You have low levels of GABA, by the way, but you also wrestle with more worry. You may feel more anxiety about, I don't know, even the most basic things. Like, you would feel more anxiety about going to a party where you will have to make small talk than someone on the right side of the curve feels about skydiving. You will feel it for days. So do me a favor. Place yourself, just in your own mind, put an X wherever you're at on that. Don't judge yourself. Nobody else is going to know this. This is just between you and God. But put an X somewhere on there and say, I think that's actually where I am. And as we consider the idea of risk today, I want you to just think about how many risks we don't really ponder. If you just think about the average home, what do you think is the most dangerous object in your home? Yeah, I didn't. I heard something.
My child.
Your child. There you go. That's good. 460,000 people a year get injured by kitchen knives. That makes sense. Some people have that. Some people get killed by kitchen knives. True. Power saws. 100,000 injuries or deaths per year from a power saw. These make some sense, but let me give you some others. 20 people a year in our country die from strangulation from draperies. Yes. Pillows. The average pillow seriously will injure or kill at least 4,000 people a year. All your pillows should be gone, especially if on that bell curve you're low risk. Take your pillows off. But what do I think has the most risk in your house, in your home, in your apartment, wherever you live? What is it that has the most risk for causing you the most pain? It's a chair. 19,000 severe injuries and deaths just from recliners per year. But I'm actually talking about something even deeper. There is just something about a comfortable chair. Now, I don't know if you think of any of those chairs as comfortable, but you have a comfortable chair, the one you think of as the most comfortable. It might be the chair you do work on. For some of you, it might be a chair you watch shows on. For some of you, it's a chair you play video games on. You spent a lot of money. You bought it specifically to play video games on. Maybe you do have an old school recliner and you just love that chair. Be careful. Just be careful. Maybe if you're like me, I like a chair and not a recliner, but an ottoman. I feel very comfortable. That's my chair of choice. I've done that same kind of chair for like 25 years. And I just want you to take a moment and imagine that you are sprawling out on that chair. Maybe the lights are turned low. You're just relaxing. Maybe you have some food, whatever's your favorite comfort food that you would eat. Your phone or your remote is in your hand, whatever it is you're going to do. And you've kind of locked the world outside. And you're just comfortable, sinking in, relaxing. Maybe even to that point where you just get a little like sleepy. When you're in that place of comfort, that chair, that feeling, do you feel ready to spring into action in the world? Are you poised right then for an explosion of growth? If I said right then, right where you're at, and go, are you ready to develop yourself? Are you ready to grow? Are you ready to kind of do something with your life? You're like, no, not right now. It's interesting, though. We may not always do it with a chair, but I think internally we do this to some degree. What we do is pursue comfort, pursue ease. We'd like life not to be so difficult. But this is not God's goal for you, pursuing comfort, trying to minimize problems and stress, or for many people, trying to maximize safety, maximize security. We've spent the first few weeks of this series on what are the rules of life. And then last week, how do you live intentionally? And today what I want to do is challenge us to take the challenge of God over comfort, to take a little risk with our lives. I closed last week asking you this question. What is it that is that subtle but unmistakable reason that God made you the way he did? That there is something unique about you that nobody else in this church, nobody else in this city, genuinely, nobody else in this world has been created like you have. And it may be subtle, and the differences may be subtle, but it is unmistakable. And there is a reason God created you the way God created you. So why? I think it's so that you and I can take a little more challenge in our life. That we can come out of comfort. To put it more simply, that life is too short to always play it safe, to always be thinking about the what ifs. Think about it for yourself, wherever you placed that X. Are you somebody who plays it safe? I'll give you some questions. You can consider your answers to these. Do you stay in an unfulfilling job to avoid uncertainty? Another question you might ask yourself, do I hold back honest feelings so that I can prevent rejection from someone else? Another question, do I stop pursuing a meaningful goal in my life? Have I stopped pursuing something meaningful in my life because I'm afraid of failure? Maybe what it would do to my self-image. Maybe go a little deeper. Do I always over-prepare because mistakes feel unbearable? Everything's become what if, what if, what if. Do I stay silent in groups so as to not sound wrong or be judged? Have I, over the years, shrunk down my goals in life? Have I actually shrunk down God's image within me because I don't want to feel bad if things don't go right? It's interesting, God does not major in comfort. He doesn't specialize in it. From Abraham in the Bible, being called to basically start a nation, and he had no interest in it. To Moses, to Ruth. Later in the New Testament, we see Peter and Paul and John and James. God just calls ordinary people to face some challenge in their life, to take some risk. Now, I'm not talking about doing something impulsive or stupid. This isn't about going over Niagara Falls in a barrel or you risking a bunch of money, you know, like betting your life savings on the Colorado Rockies to win the World Series next year. Do not do that. But I will say this. God does not spend his time calling people to things that are simple and easy. The process seems fairly similar for everyone. Over the years, I've just found that everyone has the same kind of story. It looks a little different. But at some point, if they stop, the story ends for them. And if they're not careful, they get a little bit bitter at the world. Bitter at other people, it becomes very easy to see other people as the enemy. When really, reality is they actually don't like themselves a whole lot. Why? Because we know we were made for more. Deep inside, we know we were made for something. When God challenges us to get out of comfort, it starts with an initial call. You have had this call in your life. Like, I promise you. You're like, when, where, how? I don't know. You have had a call in your life. Now, a call in the Bible, it is not necessarily God coming down, though it does happen here and there, coming down and like saying something to you specifically, like the angel came to Joseph and Mary. Most of the time, it is us starting to understand the gifts and talents and skills we've been given and other people telling us, hey, you're pretty good at that. By the way, if you want to know what your passion is, if you're young here, I'll just say this. A lot of people are like, follow your passion, follow your passion. Do not follow your passion. Seriously. You'll have time for your passion in the future. Here's what really happens. Follow what you're really good at, even if it's just one thing. Follow that and get better and better at that. Give all the time and energy you can to that one thing you're really good at. Here's what will happen. People will say something to you about that, and it'll start to become passionate for you. You'll be like, oh, I am really good at that. Oh, it feels good to get these compliments. All of a sudden, that becomes a passion. When you learn that stuff, this starts to get you to understand your call. Because those things, as they work in who you are and how God has made you to be, you start to see places you can serve God with those things. If you have not done that, you may be stuck at the initial call. You may not have left this part yet. That's not me judging you. That's not me telling you to feel bad and guilt and shame about it. It's me to tell you, reflect on this. Think about this. Because I promise you, you have been called by God. Now, some people get this when they're really young. I think of a 15-year-old David who's supposed to go up against Goliath. This crazy story we get. Takes the little stone, slingshot. Some people get called later in life. I think about Abraham, who I was talking about earlier. He gets called at 99 to go on an adventure with God. God is always summoning you and I to serve him. He's summoning you right now to serve him. If you're not sure what your call is or if God's doing that for you, consider this today, right now, me talking, here's your call. I'm going to be a little mini prophet for God on behalf of the journey and just say to you, you are called by God. You need to be doing something to serve God. It can start really small, and over time, you can expand it. In fact, there's an entire chapter in the Bible, Hebrews 11. I would encourage you to go read that today. Take the Bibles that you have at home, open up to Hebrews 11, read the entire chapter. You can read the entire book if you would like. As we like to say, if you don't have a Bible, we have some in the back. They're at that same connect table. Grab one of those, take it home, make it yours. It's our gift to you, and read it. And if you go to Hebrews 11, which is about, I don't know, 7/8 in the back of the Bible. I keep giving these like measurements. I was thinking this last week, and everybody's like, probably like, I didn't know we had to do math at church. I mean, it was a pain. So 7/8 is 87.5% into the Bible. If you go all the way to the back, you will see Hebrews. And you go to Hebrews 11, and when you get to Hebrews 11, you are going to see about people who have these very serious encounters with God. And they are ordinary people who are given high-risk assignments. You'll see God asking Noah to build an ark. But it's really not about just building an ark. It's about doing something for God in the face of ridicule. You will notice Abraham leaving everything familiar to go on an adventure. You're going to notice Joseph, who is getting beaten up on all sides, not sure what to do, feeling like he's just got this very difficult plan of suffering ahead of him, still being faithful to God. You'll see Moses defying Pharaoh, thus it's going to cost him everything. This is how the writer of Hebrews describes people who say yes to God. I do not have time to tell about those who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of the lions, a little note to Daniel there, who quenched the fury of the flames and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength. Well, I just stopped right there. Whose weakness was turned to strength. That there's something about when we get our call, the thing we think is weak about us, maybe God actually wants to use that. Maybe for you, it's your anger. Maybe you're just too angry of a person. Maybe you don't think that, but others around you do, I promise. And maybe you haven't thought through that that anger is just that you want something to be different in the world. And you can use that weakness for a strength. Maybe it's you're fearful. You just have too much fear. You're way over on that left side. You worry all the time. You're stressed all the time. What would it look like to give some of that fear to God and say, God, I want to take these worries and these fears, and I want to learn a little bit about faith. So I'm going to try some things that maybe will get me a little closer to working for you and serving you, even in ways that are a little uncomfortable. These people whose weakness was turned to strength, keep going, who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies, and there were others who were tortured, refusing to be released. Some faced jeers and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. And man, my favorite little line from this, and the world was not worthy of them. All of the people that he's talking about in Hebrews were scared to death at some point of the call of God. That they were supposed to do something with their unique ability and skill and who God created them to be. But they sought comfort for too long, and God came and whacked them upside the head and said, no, you need to do something. And with all that fear, they took a little step of faith and they did something. To the point that that final line, the world was not worthy of them. There was something great about them, not because of who they were, but because of what God was doing in them. God is calling you to something. I don't know what, but he is. And this gets us to this kind of second thing that happens. We get that initial call. People will fight it. I have someone I know that I've been thinking about all week with this talk. I think he's been fighting it for a couple of decades. He's still fighting it. I hung out with him just a few weeks ago, and I could feel it churning within him, fighting this. Because the next thing is we have to have a response. When God calls you to do something for him, very rarely do any of us go, oh, what a great opportunity. This is what I've always wanted. Very rarely. Most people fight it. Most people's response to God's calling, whether you see it in Scripture or you see it in your own life or in the lives of others, is almost always fear. Sometimes people think God would never call us to something we're scared to do. Why would God do that? Or God would never ask us to do something we can't handle. Again, not true. A loving God, a loving Father, will challenge you to do things that push you, that you're not comfortable with. It's one of my favorite things that I always enjoyed being a father with my wife. Sometimes, again, the kids would want to do something. I'd be like, yeah, go do that. And I could just see my wife going, ugh. And man, my wife is tough as nails. But all that nurturing side would come in. And I'd be like, it's all right. It's okay. Go. You can do this. It's just a challenge. Try something. Do something. Push yourself. That is what God calls us to do. Push yourself. Challenge yourself. Whatever you think you can't handle right now, in your life, whatever it is, maybe it was what you were praying earlier, whatever you think you can handle, it is simply because you don't realize God's already in it with you. He's not beckoning you. He's there with you. He's saying, you can do this. It's okay. Don't let fear hold you back. If there is a challenge in front of you, a course of action that could cause you to grow and that would be helpful to people around you, but you find yourself scared about it, I would say there's a real good chance that God is in that challenge. That the fear itself should make you go, oh, this is a little different. If I could take it a step further, if you're not facing any challenges too big for you right now, if you're so comfortable in life or so scared of even finding out what it would look like to do these things, and it's been a while since you even felt scared about doing something for God, you're sitting in that chair a little too long. You've gotten a little too comfortable. It's okay. We all do this. We seek comfort. We seek this kind of ability to just like, oh, I want everything to be fine. Think about it. Have you ever said that? If only this and this and this had happened in life, everything would be smooth. When has that ever actually happened? Because it's just not reality. Life is not smooth. Because as the fear comes in, that's where that resistance comes in. And when we're resistant to a calling, God never seems to react to you and I by saying, hey, it's okay, this one's scary for you. Why don't you go sit on the sidelines? You're okay, no big deal. Go sit on the sidelines. There'll be other people I'll call in, they'll do it. That is really not God's answer to you being scared. He never seems to say, never mind. He actually just seems to do little pokes and prods here and there all the time. Sometimes he pokes and prods us for days and weeks and months. For some people, it's years and even decades. Hey, you should be doing this. And we're like, oh, well, I'm not good at that. I think you should just think about this. Oh, I don't know. That takes a lot of time. I think you should try this. Oh, I'm tired. Yeah, I know. Here. Poking and prodding you and poking and prodding you. Because the promise to Joshua is the same as the promise to us. Joshua faced a monumental task. You can go read this in Joshua. This is right in the beginning. Joshua chapter 1. He is taking over to take the people into the promised land. He is not fully comfortable with this. Are they going to listen to him? Does he have what it takes? Is he smart enough? And this is what God says to him. Have I not commanded you? By the way, the word command is an awesome word, not a bad phrase. A command is a good thing. Biblically, what this means is I have given you a challenge, a charge, a mission, a purpose. This is what God would be saying to you right now. I have commanded you. And put your name in there. I have commanded you. I have given you a charge. I've given you a purpose. I've given you a mission. You, not the person next to you, not Aaron up here singing or Michael up here talking, every one of us, I've commanded you. Be strong. Get courageous. Now, you may be going, I don't feel very courageous. I have a lot of fear. Yeah, I get it. I get it. Welcome to the club. We all have fear. Be strong and be courageous. How do we get that courage? Listen to the next words. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, meaning taking your courage down, because the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. I have taken some risks in my life that I was surprised at over the years. Things I look back now and I'm like, oh, I was actually a pretty fearful guy. I just was. My 20s, super fearful kind of guy. And I've looked back and gone, why did that happen? I don't think it was me. I don't have what it takes. I have just noticed with people who start to do some things that they lean on God. There's a humility that comes in. The ego has to go away. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. There is no growth in comfort. If you want to grow, this is how you grow. And it does not mean nothing bad will happen. Bad things are going to happen. But by the way, I was trying to say this earlier. Bad things happen in comfort just as much. I think maybe more often. Just sitting in comfort is not how humans are supposed to be. This is not how we were made. Bad things just happen, so might as well face your fears and do things for God with your special calling. I go back to that question. Have you been able to answer it yet? I'd love you to be able to answer this question for yourself. If you're not sure how to answer this, take this question to one or two people you really trust who know you, and when you tell them good news about you, they're excited. Do not take it to some people who you tell them good news about you and they're like, "Yeah, yeah, it's great for you." Not those people. Find those one or two people who are really for you and say, "I want to do something for God. What do I do for God?" And just say this, "What is the subtle but unmistakable reason that God made me the way he did?" And just see what they say. Tell them to be as open as they want to be. And if you feel inadequate to serve God, like you're just like, "Ugh, I don't have what it takes," good. Seriously, good. You should. You are inadequate. You are. So am I. That is not the point. We're all inadequate. That's why we get to lean on God. This is where it gets so cool. But you have to choose to move, to leave the chair, to leave comfort, to take the challenge. Because only people who say yes to challenge, demand, and risk, it is only those people who are ever fully alive. That's it, those people. Everyone else who sits in comfort, it's a slow, slow feeling of inadequacy, fear, moving away from God even. But when you do the opposite, you get this fourth thing. You get a changed life. And this is going to look different for everyone here. For some of you, this is just a small step. Just small. By the way, that guy that I was telling you about that I hung out with a few weeks ago, I've known him for years. I've never challenged him. I've always just kind of stayed in a comfortable relationship with him. And that night, he was just saying some things, and I was like, "All right, God, I am not comfortable saying anything to this guy, but I'm doing it." And I did. And I very lovingly just said, "Hey, I think maybe you're having a lot of angst with some stuff around God, around your past, about what the future's supposed to look like." I just started talking to him. That isn't anything spectacular. I didn't change the world. And I don't even know that I've changed his life, but I'll tell you, it changed me. It gave me a little more courage, a little more strength. Your fears, if they take over, will only lead to more comfort, more safety. So how do you overcome these fears? I already said, put your faith in our God, not in yourself. Don't worry if you feel inadequate. Don't even worry if you just don't always like yourself that much. God likes you plenty. You can just take a little bit of a step. You don't need to compare your faith to anyone else at all. Instead, compare your faith to God's image of you. When God sees you, he sees you as his beloved. He sees you strong every place you feel weak. He sees you facing your fears. He can see an image of what it would look like. That's one of my favorite things about God is he's just a really good parent. He gives a preferred future. He goes, "I see a vision for what you could be." And we as his children go, "Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I can be that." And God's like, "Yeah, you can." And all of a sudden, we start to become that. You start to face your fears. You take risks for him. You find that you can face challenges with courage. You start living by faith. You start to confront difficult situations without fear of being disliked. You're more generous with God rather than waiting for more. You pursue a goal, even if failure is possible. Maybe especially if failure is possible. You open yourself to what God can do even when you're scared. So go back to that bell curve. Go back and remember where you placed yourself. And I'm not really sure where you put yourself on the bell curve. And I will tell you, it doesn't really matter to me. Really. I don't care if you're in the middle, if you're all the way to the left, if you're all the way to the right. I really don't care. What counts as a significant risk for you will be a little different than anyone else in the world. Just because you might see yourself on the right side of this bell curve does not necessarily mean you have more faith or you figured something out. Not necessarily. It could just mean you have more GABA, right? And just because you're on the left side doesn't mean you are spiritually inferior to the thrill seeker. You just have some anxiety. The goal for every single person in here is you take what counts as a risk for you. Don't compare yourself to anyone else. Don't worry about anybody else's ex. Wherever you're at, what is the next little place you can start to move? The next little risk you can take to serve God, starting right where you're at. I close by saying again, God is calling you. It is our turn now to get out of our chairs, to move, to take the challenge. As Aaron comes to lead us in worship and we take the Eucharist together, I'm going to encourage you to take a moment just in prayer with God. And before we go to the table, I'm just going to ask you to settle your hearts and your mind as we talk to God. And maybe just open yourself to the Holy Spirit. Maybe become a bit curious in your heart. Take away resistance as much as possible. Become a bit curious of what God has for you. And don't compare yourself to anyone else. But simply ask this question. God, what challenge do you have specifically for me? Ask that with curiosity. Pray that with openness. God, what challenge do you specifically have for me? And maybe just tell God, say, I feel fear. But I want to hear what you have to say. I want comfort, but I'm ready for a challenge. I want courage and faith, even though I'm scared. And so take some time with that prayer. And when you're ready, I'm going to encourage you to take that curiosity to God and respond at the table. You'll take the bread there and you'll dip it into the wine or the juice. You'll bring it into your body, bringing the death of Christ into your body, and you become the life of Christ. And this is so important to always remember when you take the Eucharist. You are the embodiment of Christ to the world now. If you're not sure what your calling is, that can be it to start. Oh, I've taken Christ in me, and now I am Christ to the world. So I encourage you to go and respond to God at the table. If you'll pray with me as we prepare to go. Lord, I thank you for taking your own challenge, really, to come to live among us, to die for us, to resurrect for us. God, let us be open to your calling on our lives. Let every person in here who feels inadequate and fearful realize that that's just beckoning them from you to come towards you, to come towards faith. Let us, being a church, be a place where people get encouragement, feel a sense of strength because they're here. And let us come out of comfort and take your challenge to live our lives for you. We now, God, we will come and meet you at the tables today. It's in your name, Christ Jesus, we pray. Amen.